Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show for Monday, June 5th. This is On Deck. I'm Stephen Nesbitt, and I'm here with Levi Weaver, who writes the Athletic's daily baseball newsletter, The Windup, with Ken Rosenthal. Levi, how you doing?
I'm hanging in this weekend. I am watching the Texas Rangers in their first year outside of the curse of Levi Weaver. I leave the Rangers beat, and now they are just freaking unstoppable. On today's show, we are going to talk about Aaron Judge. We're going to preview our favorite series of the week. We are, of course, going to make our homer picks for the week, and Stephen will explain what's really going on with black holes. Spoiler, there are ghosts involved. Cannot wait.
Of course there are. And there are also some supernatural powers at work in what's happening in the Bronx. Aaron Judge is doing what I think everyone said in their hot analysis this offseason would not and could not happen again. He is effectively just redoing what he did last year. He got the bag. He made history last year, and now he's just running it all back. Had he not been on the injured list for a couple weeks early this season, he would basically be replicating or maybe even bettering his numbers from a year ago. As we stand today, he's out on Sunday as we record. He banged his big toe running into the wall, making a fantastic catch the other day. He also hit a homer in that game. So, assuming he doesn't miss a lot of time, let's run on that premise. Then he is batting .291, .404, .670, .404, a 1.078 OPS. He had a 1.111 last year. We're looking at 19 homers at this point, so he's not in the major league lead. However, he's still at like 50 homer pace. And that's having a stint on the aisle. What this guy is doing is ridiculous. And it feels like we were kind of promised like a flash in the pan year for him. And he's just running it back.
Yeah, I had a moment the other night. It was getting late. I was trying to get this newsletter done. And I'm reading through Jason Stark's five wildest stats of the year. And through 47 games here, I'll just read it to you. I'll spoil the article. Aaron Judge in 2022, through 47 games, 18 home runs. 2023, 18 home runs. Multi-homer games, 4 home runs, 4 home runs. Multi-hit games, 13 games, 13 games. Sorry, I said 4 home runs, I meant 4 multi-homer games. Runs scored, 2022, 39. 2023, he had 41. And I got curious and I looked up, all right, when was that 47th game last year? Because I know he spent some time on the IL. Like last year, his 47th game was on May 31st. I looked this year, his 47th game was on May 31st. And I'm like, okay, speaking of black holes, what's going on here? How is this possible? Was he getting extra days off? Did the great Jason Stark mess up when he said, you know, the time on the IL is going to cost him? No, I forgot. The baseball season started late last year because of the lockout. Everybody got a little 10-day stint on the IL to start the season, but then they made it up later. So yeah, he's not on pace to get to 62 again. But my goodness, I mean, just a lot of times you do see those guys. They get the big contract. But I guess this is just sort of refer to the work that we have on the Athletic Day today on the podcast. But I was reading Eno Saris's article where he talked to Marcus Semien and a couple of other guys about how it's difficult to change teams. That first year with a new team, you're still finding your routine. In Semien's case, it was his kid's first year in school, so he's getting home at midnight. He's waking up at 6:30 because that's really the only time he gets to see his kids. He's taking them to school. But statistics show that if that big contract comes and you stay, your statistical numbers are generally more in line with what you've done the rest of your career. A lot of guys, when they switch teams, that'll dip. So, you know, if Aaron Judge signs with the Giants, do these numbers dip? I don't know. That's a hypothetical that we're just never going to know the answer to. But yeah, you're right. Secured the bag, and then he's just doing exactly the same thing with the exception of a slight little stint on the IL. That catch that he made. So this is going to be difficult to explain on a podcast where people can't see and I can't just sort of hold my phone screen up to your ears. But if you weren't watching, it's the eighth inning. The Yankees are up 5-3. J.D. Martinez hits a liner to the wall. Aaron Judge basically plays Kool-Aid Man, crashes through the right field gate and into the Yankees dugout, or the Yankees bullpen, I think is what he was banging into there. My favorite part of this is there was a guy sitting in a chair. I couldn't tell if it was a backup catcher, bullpen catcher, relief pitcher, what, sitting in a chair. And if you watch in slow motion, the gate that Judge bangs into, you've got an entire Hulk worth of momentum crashing into this gate, and it slams open. Basically, the corner of the gate hits the chair right between this guy's knees. I mean, if he had been a foot to either side, that could have been really, really bad. Like that level of momentum just banging an entire gate. Like if you've ever, as a kid, I used to do this and it's horrible and I'm sorry. I would be in the passenger seat of the back seat and I would be like, oh, I'll open the door for my little brother. And then at the last second, I would just open it really fast and the door would bang into my brother and he'd fall down. And it was just horrible. Brothers are horrible to each other. But it would have been that, but much, much bigger, just banging into this bullpen catcher. I don't know how he didn't fall down. It hit the chair. This is probably not great audio because I'm trying to describe something that you can't see. But go back and watch it in slow-mo and watch this person, this unidentified Yankees member of the traveling squad who just takes that blow and does not fall down and is not injured. But it was so close. It could have been bad. Could have been so much worse than just Aaron Judge stubbing his toe.
I've said on here before that the reds and blues of StatCast can be sort of like caveman analysis sometimes. It's like we think we're being real new age, and in reality, we're not exactly reading things properly. But if you look at the reds, I mean, just look at the reds on Aaron Judge's page. When I say that we were promised like he could never repeat this, I don't actually mean that. I mean, he's been who he's been since the start of his career. He's a guy who hits the ball ridiculously hard all the time. He walks a lot. He's going to strike out a lot, but he's going to be like a maximum damage offensive player. And yet he's doing some things this year where he's continuing to take steps forward. And so when I say we were promised a step back, I really mean, you almost look at it like the, Giancarlo paradox, where you figure this guy, big, beefy slugger, is going to start falling apart, won't be able to put together 140, 150 game seasons. And Judge's, for the most part, been able to do that while being 6'8 and hitting the ball a million miles an hour. This year, he has the highest average exit velo of his career. His barrel rate's up to 30%, which if you listen to Rates and Barrels and hear it, one time, he'll tell you like 10% barrel rate, I like that. Anything, above 10, I'm into that. So he's doing three times that. And like I said, he gets on base all the time. His chase rate is better than it's ever been in his career. So like you see the evolution of this guy, he's still going to strike out because he swings out of his shoes. But if you can eliminate the chasing at horrible pitchers' pitches, the sky obviously already was a limit for this guy. But even at 31, we're seeing growth from a player who, terrible pun, had really hit his growth spurt years ago.
Hey, Steven, the Mets are mid. Let's preview a series. At the risk of taking the low-hanging fruit, we are going to preview the Mets and the Braves because that's an important series in the NL East. We expected the Mets to be much, much better than they are. Instead, they've been streaky. We have to look at the average with the Mets because there are days that they look like the Mets we expected. There are also days that they look like, I don't know, the Nationals. Like they will win a few in a row. They'll lose a few in a row. But I mean, look at this. So team OPS, batting average, runs, hits, they're somewhere between 17th and 22nd in the league. You look at their defense, all of the defensive stats have them almost exactly in the middle. Pitching stats, 16th in runs, 29th in pitcher war, 18th in strikeouts, 8th in team ERA, so that's not too bad. The only thing that they do well is not strike out at the plate. They have the third fewest strikeouts in baseball as a lineup. That's it. Everything else is super mid, and man, like how much longer do they have to figure it out? That's a very expensive roster. They're not going to sell, right?
No, I don't think they can. But how hard do you go to buy with this roster? I don't know. Like, are you really going to, speaking of like college football language, are you going to recruit over Starling Marte? You know, like, are you going to bring in an outfielder that's going to start ahead of him? Are you going to say, we can't have Tommy Pham starting out here anymore? Well, he's actually been one of their better hitters for much of this way. So you're not going to probably get a new second baseman and go ahead. So I don't know where they add here other than saying you can never have enough pitching because they're testing that limit. They've gone out and got all the pitching possible, and they've gotten some better performance of late. And in reality, they're a 500 team right now. They're not out of it. I mean, look at the team ahead of them right now. We'll get to them later. The Marlins are in a playoff position. If you hunt down the Marlins, maybe you have a chance to be right in that playoff picture as well. So they're not out of it, but this is not a lineup that scares anybody. And you would have figured for that at that price point and with this rotation they've put together, you'd have a pretty potent team. And Now you're seeing, you know, just on Sunday, Kodai Senga lasted only 2 2/3, 5 walks, just like a weird outing, got banged around and they took the loss. It's just been a really unsatisfactory season. And even the bright spots, like David Robinson's been great. Well, he cracked the other day and losing a game in the ninth inning. So a strange season so far for them. Still plenty of time to salvage it, but they need to hit their stride. And meanwhile, the Braves are ticking right along despite having Kyle Wright, not having Max Fried. You know, they lost one to Merrill Kelly and the D-backs, but then behind Strider on Saturday and then a grand slam on Sunday from Eddie Rosario, they take that series. And the Braves are still in a good position. They're still in a great position in a division that never makes sense.
Yeah, like how good are the Braves that they lost 2 out of 3 to a historically bad Oakland A's team? And we're still looking at the division going, eh, okay, that's fine. Like not a huge deal. Anyone else loses 2 out of 3. Any of the other division leaders lose 2 out of 3. And we're like, they might not be for real. No, the Braves are fine. They're fine. What, 4-3 in their last 7 games over the last week? If this is their swoon, that's still a winning record. They're fine.
Yeah, let me segue into my series of my favorite series of the week, which is kind of tongue in cheek, but it has to do with the same division. It's the Marlins hosting the Royals. This is not a clash of titans. However, it's kind of time that we take the Marlins seriously, even though they have, was looking this up earlier, for the power rankings, they have the third worst run differential in the National League. But on the flip side, they are on 8-3 run, 3.5 back of the Braves, and they're in a wild card spot as of right now. They came from behind on Sunday to beat the A's despite like a really rocky early going for Sandy Alcantara. And now they get the Royals. So the two worst teams in the AL back-to-back, and they have a chance to really make some moves here. I mean, what if the Mets put a foot down and take 2 of 3 from the Braves, and then the Marlins are able to sweep the series? You know, they're making waves. I don't know if it makes any logical sense, but when you have Luis Arraez batting .392 with a .445 OBP, that's pretty insane stuff past the a third of the way into the season. I saw a tweet from Codify saying the last big leaguer with a higher batting average after playing 54 games, this was on Saturday, in a regular season was Chipper Jones in 08. This is not normal stuff to be batting almost .400 at this point in the season. So the Marlins, again, I would not bet on them to make the postseason, but right now they're certainly putting the pressure on the Braves in a way the Mets and Phillies have been incapable of.
I think the big surprise for me with the Marlins has been Jesus Sanchez. Like in 172 games before this year, he was hitting .221. He had a .714 OPS, like marginally a big leaguer. Now, I mean, it's the Marlins. They kind of fly under the radar, but I'm looking, this is before Sunday's game, hitting .317. He's got a .964 OPS, which is actually even higher than Arraez. Dude's having a breakout year. And you got to have guys like that if you're going to be a team that exceeds expectations. Meanwhile, in the Royals, I looked at a trend. And there are going to be a lot of teams looking for bullpen arms this year. And obviously, Aroldis Chapman is a guy that is going to go somewhere, probably. But there are two guys, Carlos Hernandez and Daniel Lynch. Their ERAs aren't pretty. Hernandez is .476. Lynch is .435. But Hernandez is striking out 12.1 per nine. Lynch, 11.3. And their FIP, 283 for Hernandez, 222 for Lynch. So the Royals obviously not going to, you know, make a playoff run this year. But for teams that are looking for bullpen arms, that might be where you start shopping if the White Sox don't want to blow up their team. My series this week, again, not an overly like overwhelming series, the Tigers and the Phillies, but they have pretty very similar records. But completely different vibes, right? The Tigers, let me look up their records. They're 26-30 plus whatever they did Sunday. The Phillies are 26-32 plus Sunday. The Tigers are like, oh, heck yes, this is amazing. And also we're playing in a division where like, that's fine. We're still within striking distance. Meanwhile, the Phillies are like, we're 8 games out. We're going to have to come back. This is really bad. This is not what we hoped to happen. So it's weird how you can have the same record as another team, but just completely, completely different vibes. I say good vibes in Detroit. Also, now Riley Green is on the IL. Eduardo Rodriguez is probably going to miss a fair amount of time. They've got 4 guys on their active roster with sub-200 batting averages. And I know batting average is like a caveman stat to use, but maybe, I don't know, enjoy the good vibes while they last, because injuries of that ilk tend to make things a little more difficult. Speaking of injuries in Philadelphia, they've got like the curse of the first baseman, right? Because Rhys Hoskins is out for the year. Alec Bohm takes over first base. Now he's going to be out for a little while. We had talked earlier in the year about Bryce Harper playing first base, but he's not going to be cleared to do that until the All-Star break. So right now it's Cody Clemens, which if you're trying to go win the NL East, with Cody Clemens as your first baseman. God bless him. He is a big leaguer, but your third string first baseman. And then the two other people that jumped out to me were just Kyle Schwarber, who's hitting 167, even though he still mashes the ball. And then Jeff Hoffman, who came out of nowhere. He's got an 0.84 ERA after all these years toiling on the Rockies, being just very, I hate to use this Gen Z word multiple times in one podcast, but being very mid for most of his career. Now he's a very good relief pitcher. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Cody Clemens with his Tigers homecoming here. Who would have expected he was going to be the big part of that trade that has kind of worked out for both sides, honestly, this offseason. Yeah, last thing on the Tigers rotation is in tatters. They are waiting for all of their promising guys to come back from injury, but Reese Olson getting a chance in that rotation. Interested to see where he goes with things because they've gotten some probably better than expected results, I think, around that pitching staff, and real opportunity for him to take hold and, you know, declare that he's going to be part of that rotation of the future. All right, Levi, it's time to make our Homer Chase picks for the week. Let me update everybody. In our cumulative season-long Homer Chase, we had a draw this week, but Spencer Steer got one homer for me. Jordan Alvarez, one for you, but I'm going to take that as a W because,
yeah,
listen, I had Steer. You
expect him to have more. Yeah, I know, yeah. I know.
So the season total so far is Nesbitt 7. Levi has 5. So you're 2 behind there, but a little happier time for you. Let's do a quick update before we make our picks. The arms race recap. Tanner Bibee versus Joe Ryan was our actually Guardians Twins head-to-head over the weekend.
This is my favorite part of the show, by the way, because I don't know what's going to happen. This is a surprise to me every week.
As we do every time, let me just read the line and we'll have you guess which was better. Tanner Bibee went out 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. And on the other side, Joe Ryan had 6 and 2/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts.
Oh, I definitely win.
You definitely win. This one isn't even in Fangraphs yet, so I went and did the, you know, by hand calculation.
You pulled out your abacus and figured this out on your own.
And the way I had it drawing up was 52-47, which is way closer than I would expect. So I may have done that wrong, but definitely Joe Ryan's coming out ahead. So Levi's got a 4. I've got 0. I don't know where skunking is in this game, but we may reach that point where I'm just trying to shoot the moon here. So give me your Homer Chase pick.
All right, so I'm losing in the Homer Chase, so I'm doing it. I'm taking the easy one. Actually, wait. No, what if Aaron Judge's foot is hurt? I was going to pick Aaron Judge. I'm going to give him some time to get healthy, actually. So the Mets give up the third most home runs in the sport. I'm pulling an audible and I'm changing it at the last minute. I'm taking Ronald Acuna.
Nice. No, I like that one, actually. I'm going to take the guy you had last week. I'm going Yordan Alvarez. I think he's got more in the tank, and we're going to get a 3-homer week coming right up.
If Alvarez produces for you and doesn't produce for me, I'm calling Rangers bias here.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to producer Brian for waiting us out and keeping us in line here. You can find our work all week long at theathletic.com. Subscribe to The Athletic for $2 per month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseballshow. Sign up for The Windup, The Athletic's daily baseball newsletter with Levi and Ken Rosenthal for absolutely free. Later in your feed, Rangers GM Chris Young, the very tall man. Visit Starkville, talking the Red Hot Rangers with Jason Stark and Doug Glanville. You're not going to want to miss that. Give us a follow on Twitter. Levi is at 32EFIS, and I'm at Stephen J. Nesbitt. The two of us will be back on Thursday with more of What's on Deck.
And ghosts.